Excelsior, and welcome back, true believers, for another installment of Zach and Tavy's marvelous adventure. I am Zach Walliner.
And I'm Tavy Phillips.
And we are here taking a journey through the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the beginning, where Tavy is still learning, though she's already come quite a bit by this point.
And along.
I'm her guide, as I've been through it all already pretty much, and know Marvel pretty well inside and out, the films and shows and comics. So we are just going through it all and sharing our opinions and from our differing viewpoints. So today's episode, what are we tackling, Tavy?
It's Thor the Dark World, what I've been calling Thor 2, but it's Thor the Dark World.
It sure is easier to say that, but like yeah. You said, aside from the volumes of Guardians of the Galaxy ahead of us, there's basically
some numbered sequels.
No numbered sequels. They just decided subtitles are the way of the future.
Yep.
So we already had one adventure with Thor, and then he was in the team of Avengers, and now this is his second outing. He's the first solo character since Iron Man to get his own direct sequel. So we're here with him and the adventure that ensues there. Do you want to share any initial thoughts before we get into any of the other segments?
Sure. I mean, it was watchable. It was a little bit of a slog. I felt longer than maybe it even was. It felt long. But I did watch it all in one sitting. It was a couple days ago, so we know how my memory works. We'll see the really obvious things that I've forgotten. But it was okay. It was watchable. I liked the cast, except for, again, I still don't think Chris Hemsworth has much charisma, but his supporting cast is quite good. Some great comic relief characters, some new villain types, unless I missed something. Are Dark Elves new?
Yeah, there's that opening with Odin narrating, which I think in the last one was Odin narrating at the beginning a bit too. I think
that, I feel like,
familiar.
Yes.
I think so. So here we are introduced to the Dark Elves and their backstory when he tells the story in the beginning to catch us up on thousands of years of history and the darkness. They came from the darkness before the universe somehow. They were there before everything else, I guess. And then his father, Bor. and beat them back until they've recently reemerged in the setting of this film. So yeah, they are a new element. Is there anything else you were going to say?
Just... what's that guy's name? Malekith? Is it Malekith or Malekith?
Malekith, like, yeah. It'll probably be a trivia question later, I'm guessing.
His name different ways. Yeah, it was a familiar start. And I guess we're sort of picking up where the Avengers left off in terms of Thor's storyline and Loki's storyline.
Right. We really haven't seen them.
We haven't seen them.
It's hard to tell the amount of time that's passed between these movies because you can only go by the real world. So maybe this is not exactly as far off from the Avengers release in their timeline. Maybe it's fairly soon after when you see at the very end.
I think it is. He takes Loki away. Yeah,
and
I think there's a whole bit of business about to jump around. Jane sort of moping into her cereal and things for a few months, I think they said, or I haven't seen him in a few months. Or was it a few months or was it longer than that?
It might be a few months. Yeah, and then it does start where you see Loki in shackles, I think, and he's being taken.
Loki's in shackles. We see all our friends are back. We got Frigga. Renee Russo is back. Frigga. Anthony Hopkins is back. Idris Elba is Heimdall is back. The super pals of Thor's friend group is back.
Yes, Lady Warriors Sif. 3 and Sif. Yep.
Lady Sif and Beardo and the others. still don't remember their names. And that's okay.
Fandral, Volstagg, and Hogan.
Hogan.
I feel like Hogan doesn't get much to do at all. I feel like he's of the three, even. He's the most with the least screen time.
Yeah.
And then Fandral, we have a new Fandral this time around.
Oh, is that, was notice? He supposed to be? Okay. Is that who that was supposed to be? I was like, why is Zachary Levi? Levi, why is he here? I didn't realize that was a recast. I thought that was a new character.
No, that's okay. Him. Those are those three warrior characters. And I think he may have been up for the role in the original one, but had to drop out for some reason. And now he kind of got his chance when the other guy couldn't come back.
He looks strange with blonde hair. It looks very unnatural to me. It kind of reminded me of those Tolkien elves in Lord of the Rings trilogy where everybody's wearing a really obvious blonde wig and doesn't look natural to anybody's skin color. That's the Fandral. Is that his name?
Fandral? I don't know. It's
Fandral.
It ends with an A.
That also sounds very Tolkienian. There was a lot of Tolkien vibes in Thor's world, which I think it's quasi-medieval
society.
Yeah,
I wonder if those characters are true to the Norse mythology or they were Marvel creations. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, and once you get past the biggies, the Odins, the Friggas, the Lokis, and the Thors, I don't really know anybody else in Norse mythology.
Fair point. Well, with that out of the way, I guess we'll get to some of our fun little stuff because a
Let's
lot
do
of
it.
some of the plot comes out as we do that before we further discuss. But of course, first we want to play everyone's favorite Marvel podcast game.
Spot the Stan.
I love cameos.
Where we see if you remember or caught where Stan Lee shows up in this film. So, Tavy, can you tell us, did you spot the Stan?
I spotted the Stan. I sure did. Another great comic relief scene, in my opinion, with Stan Lee, where we have our buddy, Dr. Eric Selvig, who I call Stellar Skateboard.
Right.
He has been doing some kooky stuff since his mind got inhabited by an evil god or presence. And he's been streaking through Stonehenge and things like that. So he has been, well, in the scene, he's explaining the complicated situation that they're in and his theories and plans for how they could get out of it. And it sort of sets you up to think maybe he's in front of some bigwigs or some scientists or something. And then, of course, he says something like, any questions? And you turn around and there's Stan Lee, and he is a mental patient, a fellow mental patient, because he has been locked up. Committed.
Yeah.
It's, there you go. That's what I'm looking for. Asking for his shoe back because Dr. Eric was using it as a prop in his presentation.
A lot with shoes in this movie.
Well, yeah, you're right. There is a lot with shoes in this movie. A lot of comic relief around shoes.
It is one of his funny one-liners there where, yeah, like you said, you see him in front of this blackboard. He's got all this stuff written and drawn and mapped out, and he's giving a presentation as if it's an academic thing or something, explaining people what the dire circumstances are of what's going to occur. And then you find out he's just talking to fellow mental patients. And of course, one of them is Stan. So yeah, it was definitely an amusing moment there. While we're on the subject, might as well say it. That chalkboard is full of Easter eggs.
Oh, is it?
I don't know how many exactly, but when I noticed, I didn't pause and squint and look back at it, but I did notice it says The Crossroads and The Fault, and those are things from the comics. And I believe this is also the first instance of the number 616 showing up, which we mentioned previously.
Oh, right. The version of the world.
Yeah, that's
that
the designation for the mainline Marvel universe, seemingly both in the comics and the MCU, which caused debate when people already thought from tie-in comics that the designation for this world had to be separate from the 616 of the mainline comic world. But it seems like there's two coexisting 616. But yeah, if you go back and pause it, I'm sure you read all sorts of stuff on that chalkboard, maybe more than that, that has little ties and nods to get fans excited. So that was on there. And now following Spot the Stan, we get into the trivia cards, which will likely cover a lot of what we would talk about otherwise. So I guess we'll get right to that. Well, you already answered this. Who is the leader of the Dark Elves?
Malekith.
That's right. What is the name of the ancient destructive force that Malekith plans to unleash?
That would be do they call it the Aether?
Yes.
The Aether, Aether.
It's spelled out with A-E-T-H-E-R, so it's not just a typical word, the Aether, like meaning out there in the world. I think they pronounce it as Aether, but it's like the Aether.
Right.
I gave this one away before. Who was Odin's father who defeated Malekith in battle?
Bor.
That's right. King Bor. And I think he was a relatively recent creation at the time of this movie. I remember comics with him in a run of Thor I was reading. I don't know if he went way back in the Stanley Jack Kirby days or if he was just brought about in more modern times. In which part of London does Malekith plan to unleash the power of the Aether?
Oh, God. Which part of London?
It's shown on a map at one point, if that helps jog your memory.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Greenwich.
Oh, Greenwich. Of course, like Greenwich Mean Time, the center of time. Right. And there you go, Greenwich.
Also, name of a town in my native Connecticut.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I hear Greenwich. And I go, oh, yeah, England.
Yeah. What is the name of the lieutenant that Malekith transforms into the Cursed?
Oh, man, I don't know. I just kept calling him the big scary guy. I mean,
Yeah, maybe
I do, yeah.
It maybe
I
gets
it.
Mentioned once at best, I think, because even I didn't. This didn't jump to mind. It's Algrim.
Algrim. Yeah, I don't remember anybody saying that. I'm sure somebody said it once.
Yeah.
That's a real throwaway.
Who knows? It might have only been in translated subtitles, too, for all I remember.
Yeah.
Algrim. Algrim.
Okay.
What is the name of Jane Foster's date in London?
Oh, man. I know it's played by Chris O'Dowd.
Yeah.
The Irish sort of comedic actor.
He's got
but
that
what the heck
deadpan
was his
delivery,
name?
More comic
Yeah,
relief.
he was a fun little cameo. What was that guy's name?
Very
And they're
generic.
really excited later. It's like Richard or.
There you go. You got
oh,
it.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, very generic.
What is the Asgardian name for what Jane Foster refers to as a quantum field generator?
Oh, wait. this one down, which it's not cheating if I wrote it down. No. Soul Forge.
Hey, all right.
And that brings me to the Asgardian Doctor, was played by an actor called Alice. I never know how to say her last name, but Krige. I want to say K-R-I-G-E, which she's a character actor, but she's very exciting to me as a Star Trek fan because she played the Borg Queen in the Star Trek movies and Picard series. That's so cool. It's always fun to see Alice Krige. I hope I'm saying her name right. A little
crossover of nerd.
Yeah, just a little bit of nerd crossover there. That was fun.
That's cool. Yeah, I didn't recognize her. I've never been big into Trek, more Star
Wars. We all have our areas of expertise.
Yeah. What is the name of Darcy's intern? The intern
Ian.
There you go. You got that one right away.
Yeah, the intern hired an intern. Kat Dennings, again, MVP, in my opinion, really bringing the comic timing, bringing the comic relief, doing a really good job in the film. I really enjoy it when she shows up.
I feel like with Darcy, you either love her or hate her. I think.
Sure. I can see her being irritating to a certain mindset, but I loved it.
Watching these gods fighting and mythological and monsters and stuff. Then you got her with her little wisecracks and modern pop culture references and stuff.
I love it.
Yeah, she's fine, though. At which English landmark, well, we already know this, you said, too, is Dr. Selvig filmed Running Around?
Oh, Stonehenge.
Yep. In which English city is Jane Foster reunited with Thor?
In London?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty major ones.
Yeah, big one. The biggie.
Which Avenger does Loki temporarily transform into after Thor has released him from his cell?
Love that scene. That was Cap, Captain America.
Yeah, that was a great little unexpected cameo, bringing Cap, Chris Evans in for like probably not even a day of shooting, I would guess.
Yeah, I was cheering that one. That was great. It's I feel like we don't really get to see Loki do enough of those kind of shenanigans. It's a very useful power to have, and he does use it.
In this one, he does have a little bit of fun with those, but typically not his MO. He kind of just usually makes fake versions of himself for you to run at. Or like little mirages.
Yeah.
But it's great because you think about it. Chris Evans, he's playing Loki, playing Captain America. So he's doing these
quite
big
a layered performance
things.
Chris Evans.
Like, I can feel the righteousness flowing through me. And he's like, God bless America, before he transforms again.
Yeah. Making fun of himself. It was good.
Yeah. Who allows himself to be captured by his guardians as part of the Dark Elves attack?
Oh, right. Okay. There's a whole plan.
How does the Dark Elves attack get started? Think of the prison.
There's the prison. There's Loki. There's I don't remember that whole setup. It's gone. It's gone.
It's Algrim, the cursed.
Oh, it's Algrim. Of course. He gets captured and then wreaks havoc inside the prison and lets everybody go so they could fight everybody. Of course, Algrim. I wasn't going to pull that name out, but I could have said Big Scary Guy and I just didn't.
Yeah, true. I would have accepted that as an answer.
Big Scary Guy would have been okay, but no. Yeah, I remember it now. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And on that topic, I remember watching the scenes and I was thinking, Asgard really needs some better security.
Yeah.
He just like slams the dude against the laser field that's basically the prison cell wall and he forces his way through. And then another one, he just like punches really a lot of brute force and it just gets through these things that you think would be more powerful.
Yeah, he just like ran that guy's head through it until it gave away. Is that all it takes? Somebody would have done that ages ago.
Yeah, he's strong and he hits the other one that he's already broken out of and he's like letting other people out. He hits it a few times. And then he goes even to the sort of shield generator that Heimdall activates to put a protective shield from the sort of spaceships that are coming at them. And then he just punches through that a few times and it's gone. I feel like these things, for all the Asgardians and their abilities, those things would hold up a little better than just really strong dude brute forcing through it. Who do Thor and Loki confront in Svartalfheim?
Oh, I guess Malekith?
Yes.
Svartalfheim. Dark elf, whatever Heim means in German, right? Land, city, right? Dark elf land. Svartalf. It's a hard word to say.
I didn't even make that connection that it's related to them, but
when I saw it written on the screen, because they put a title card up, and I go, I don't speak German, but you pick up a little bit of a word here and there, and dark elf, whatever land.
Yeah, so we are introduced to a few more of the realms in this one. So that was
That's right. When we first come across Thor in this movie, I wrote it down, they're in Vanaheim.
Yes.
Winning back the peace in the Nine Realms. That's what Thor's been doing all this time. So not calling Jane because he's too busy winning back the peace after all the destruction that Loki caused.
Sure. And I remember in that scene, it's the others, his friends, who are in this big battle. And then he shows up to help.
Right.
And they're like, we're fine with without you. Sif says something to that effect.
Yeah, they're like, we got it.
But I'm like, well, where was he up until that point?
And what were we doing? Just
why wasn't he with all of them in the first place? He just shows up like, I'm here now.
He's just making his grand entrance.
One of these questions I just have to ask when we go, well, all these little things I always can pick out because it's like, yep. It gives you pause sometimes. What object do Sif and Volstagg hand over to the Collector after the battle with the Dark Elves? Oh, we're jumping trivia about a mid-credit scene. Interesting. I don't know if we've really had that unless maybe the Nick Fury reveal from Iron Man. Maybe they covered that in the trivia.
What is it that they... Now, that I remember that mid-credit scene with Benicio del Toro, right?
Yeah, we're really getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, well, we could jump around. It's all right. Spoiler alert for an old movie.
Well, anyone coming into this, especially by now, should know. We're talking...
Better know. Now, was that the... What was that? Was that the ether?
Yes.
Okay, so they contained it in a thingy. They locked it in a little Ghostbusters ghost trap or whatever they
That's
did.
That's a good comparison. You know,
right? And then, so is this where we first hear the phrase, or has this been mentioned before and I just don't remember? They call it an infinity stone because he seems to be collecting infinity stones. And this seems like a big thing.
It's a very big thing. And very big thing. I was going to get to it when we got there, but
cards brought us there.
We can discuss it. So, and this is another point that always bugged me about this movie. Odin kind of in passing, without naming them, when he's telling exposition to Thor about the history and everything, he says there are these pieces of the start of the universe or however you phrase it. And some of them were somehow, he doesn't say they were infinity stones, but he says they're like rocks. But in this form, it was like this one thing was a liquid instead or something. And then at a point when he's fighting Malekith, Thor calls down the lightning and zaps the ether that's floating around in his liquid form and it becomes crystallized. Okay. But then Malekith still absorbs it into him like Jane had it. And he's shooting it around. He's weaponizing. Right. Jane, it was like a poison that was killing her.
Right.
And out of her control, yet somehow this guy...
He harnessed it into a weapon.
He has full control over it. But it looks not solidified like the chunks that were zapped. So I don't know how it went back and forth. But then they bring it to him and I'm like, it looks like it's still sort of plasma-y in that Ghostbuster thing. So then they refer to it as a stone. It's not a stone. It's a goop.
It's not a stone. Which makes me think, is that just a thing we call them? Are all the Infinity Stones stones? Or is this really stony?
That's another thing. When they're talking about why they're bringing it to the Collector, it's not wise to have two Infinity Stones near each other. They said they're keeping the Tesseract.
Right. The Tesseract.
Which is the MacGuffin of Avengers and Captain America's first movie. And so they're claiming now we're learning that that is technically an Infinity Stone. When, once again, it's not a stone. It's a glowy, powerful cube.
That word, it doesn't mean what you think it means.
Yeah.
Stone has a loose definition in this world. And I didn't catch Benicio del Toro's name. I'm sure they said it.
Well,
it better not be a trivia question.
Well, in the question I just asked, they said, what object do Sif and Volstagg hand over to the Collector?
Oh, the Collector. Got it.
They do. The little pink lady introduces him with his real name, but he's known as the Collector.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to ask his real name.
He says, if they're, I'm telling you right now, I don't know what that is. But he said, one down, five to go. So one down, meaning there's this, and there's the Tesseract would be two. Out of a total of five.
He only has the one in his possession.
Right. So that means there's five total. We know about this. We know about the Tesseract. I know you know all about them, but I'm learning. So
well, there's
are we,
six
are we going
total.
To meet? Right. Okay, that's right. Six to go. Math. Math is hard.
No, there's one he has and five
to go.
Yes,
and five more. Right. Plus, that's two of six that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for correcting my math, Sensei.
No problem.
So I presume we're going to meet more of these as our adventures continue, I would hope. Be very disappointing for them to mention a number and then not fulfill.
That is a very
click of them.
That is a very correct assumption, and it is what the first three phases of the Marvel universe are based around. It is called the Infinity Saga. So
I've heard this phrase though.
So every movie that came out within three whole phases, which is a huge set of years, so from 2008 with Iron Man till I think 2018, 2019, when we hit the end of the Infinity Saga, they are in play. So there are a series of MacGuffins, and I don't know how much more I should say, but I think I already kind of hinted at the end of Avengers, when we have that mid-credits tease to court death, to challenge them as to court death, and we see a guy stand up from his throne and turn to the camera and smile.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know who that is already, right?
I forgot about that guy. Is that Thanos?
Yes, that's Thanos. So he's this purple guy with a wrinkly chin.
Yeah.
He, much like the Collector, he wants all of these.
there.
So I won't go too much more into all of them, but they are the underlying theme of the overarching story of the first three phases of the Marvel Universe. You will learn more about them in a couple movies, I think, because I think that mid-credit scene with the Collector and them, I'm guessing it was filmed during the production of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Maybe James Gunn even directed it. I don't know. But that's in a set that we will see when the Collector is in play in that film. Cool. But we'll get there when we get there. But yes, your presumption about these stones and their importance can't be overstated. So you're on the right track there. Who does Loki sacrifice himself? What? That's not well-worded grammar. Actually, who does Loki sacrifice himself? No, it's not. Who does Loki sacrifice himself to defeat? Maybe that's...
Yeah, that doesn't make sense at all. That's a poorly worded card. I guess they're saying, to whom does Loki sacrifice himself in order to defeat, but they said it weird.
Who does Loki sacrifice himself to defeat? To defeat who?
Isn't it Malekith? No, it's not Malekith.
Loki's not an active player by the time Malekith is defeated.
Oh, it's a real sad scene where he presumably dies, and then I go, I don't trust that at all. We know he's coming back, and Thor's real sad about it, but I don't know.
Well, between Malekith, who else would they be fighting that's a character that's named, that's not just like
it better not be Argrim again. I'm sick of that guy.
It is Algrim.
Oh, no, Algrim. Oh, man. Every time I don't know an answer, it's Algrim.
Remember, he sneaks behind him and stabs him through.
Yes.
But he's still alive.
Oh, like a horrible scene. He pulls him in an embrace and impales him on the very spear that's coming out of his own chest. It's a very gnarly scene.
So he's able to survive that wound, at least temporarily, I guess, because of how hardy he is in that big monster form.
Yep.
And then he pulls Loki in to seemingly kill him as well. But then Loki plants a little detonator thing on his leg and sort of implodes him, maybe? I forget the way the thing worked. I think he didn't explode. He might have imploded, but it was all fiery looking and crazy. But pretty sure that guy's fully dead.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. I'm sick of that guy.
Yeah. What is Thor's mother's name? We already covered this, but
Frigga.
That's right. Who pretends to be Dr. Selvig's son to help him escape from police custody?
Oh yeah. Ian.
That's right. But I think that's not even correct. It's not police custody. He's in the institution.
He's in the institution, yeah. They have to sign him out.
Sometimes these cards hold up well.
And then the ruse is completely dropped. As soon as they have him in sight, they don't pretend that that's his kid anymore. They're just like, all right, we're going to take him out of here now. What I found striking about that scene was that they made a big show of him having a big old bag of medicine. Like, he's really got his mental illnesses that are supposedly treated by this big old bag of meds. As soon as he is reunited with his friends, he's like, well, don't need these anymore, and chucks them right into the bin.
Yeah, all of a sudden, he's got a better hold.
He's fine. He's not running through. All he needed was to get in touch with his friends again.
And to explain the situation away in the movie, he basically says, oh, I was possessed by a god. So, I mean...
What is it? Are you better now?
But also, after he kind of came to in Avengers, he seemed fine. So I don't know if it's a delayed reaction. But also, does that mean that every S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and Hawkeye also are going a little nutso?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of consistency. I guess people react to trauma differently. But I thought they did such a good job in Iron Man 3 of showing how Tony was reacting to the whole situation in New York and working through it and having PTSD. And then we get to Dr. Selving and he's just like, I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. I'm crazy. We don't say crazy, but you know what I mean. In movie land, we don't like that word in real life, but the character is acting kind of off, kooky, and then he's fine again. Okay. They don't go to pains to explain it. They want us to just accept it.
And it's not something that would necessarily add a lot to the movie for this
side character,
but it just made me think, well, if that's what's made him act this way, wouldn't it affect everyone else who he kind of had under his control? But maybe he was on a deeper level of possession with Selvig, because when we first saw Loki was actually alive after the events of Thor, the first one, it seemed he was somehow inhabiting him. Because remember, that's worth a look. So maybe that's what it was, and that separates him from the others.
Yeah, he had a different kind of experience.
By the scepter, yeah.
Well, don't go off your meds, kids. Don't do like Dr. Eric does.
Please always
work with a professional. Take your doctor's advice. That's our message here.
Who calls Jane Foster's cell phone and unwittingly helps her and Thor find their way back to Earth?
Richard, whose name we now know. remember. I loved it, even though it made no sense. It was very silly that his cell phone worked.
Somehow the reception is translating through whatever portal is connecting.
Yeah, the Earth waves or whatever network. Are getting put
I guess
through the portal.
As they're closer to whatever is the gateway, I guess cell phone signals pass through as
they
well.
They pass through.
That's
yep. And that,
all
that
the explanation
phone
we
was,
need.
Yep. The phone was charged enough. It still had a charge. Everything we needed fell right into place there.
Who shows Thor a secret portal to Malekith's world?
Oh, is that why they needed Loki?
Yes, because he's, you
I
know.
I thought that was a little unclear, and I think I missed something in the narrative, because I kept going, why do they need Loki to escape? Like, I know they couldn't get off-world. The Rainbow Bridge, or the Bifrost in the beginning of the movie,
Same
is
thing.
Repaired. It's repaired.
Yeah,
and
we
then,
see
I
that.
guess, the Dark Elf ship comes and crashes into it, so it's broken. Is that what happened? Right, so, oh no, we could get off. Now we can't get off. Now we can get off. So I guess they needed Loki and his portal.
I think he also wanted to try to do it under the radar, because Odin wasn't going to be happy with it.
Oh, yeah, Odin was.
Pointing at trees. So yep. They know Loki is a master of tricks and things, and somehow he knows of another portal that's just, you go to this location and you can transport across worlds. So then it makes you wonder, well, what's so special about the Bifrost if there are these other
if somebody can
potential
do that.
Portals?
Was it established somewhere beforehand that Loki could do that, or that Loki knew about portals to other places, or is that
I
just
think
out of
this
nowhere?
Is the first, but I guess it's just implied that he's a guy who knows his way around because of his tricky ways, and he can find the back passages of how to.
Okay, I'll buy it because we have no choice. But I will say that I don't think it was well set up, and it led to a little bit of narrative confusion for me.
That's fair.
Where we're just like, all right, what? Okay, we just accept it. Loki knows a way. Cool.
Gets the job done.
What are you going to do? Got the job done.
The world, well, this is already, you kind of answered this already. The world of Svartalfheim is home to which race?
The Dark Elves.
Correct. How does Ian save Darcy's life from the Dark Elves?
There's like weird gravity going on around the portals, and he picks up a car and throws it or something.
Yeah, he drops a car on them.
Very comical bit of business after that, where we sort of come across Darcy seems very impressed by that, him saving her life. And then the next time we see them, they're kissing passionately, embracing,
making out.
She's dipping him instead of usually the man is dipping the woman. But in this case, Darcy was dipping Ian. It was very funny.
Yeah, she just took control. She's a
dominant. That's the kind of gal she is.
What object of Darcy's does Ian throw through the portal only for them to disappear permanently? This is early
Not
on.
Not the keys, right?
Yes,
okay,
her car
keys. That was dumb.
Yeah,
we
they're
don't
saying
use that
how
word
sometimes,
either, guys, but that was not smart.
Sometimes things come back, sometimes they don't. Well, let's test that with,
with something
very
we need.
Important things.
Which I did like that Darcy said to Jane, give me your shoe. Because to Darcy, that's not something she needs. So she was following the rule, don't throw something you need through the portal. But those keys you did need, guys, come on.
Yeah, though we do see they don't technically disappear permanently. They're just transplaced because they get that phone call from Richard, when Thor and Jane are together in sort of that tunnel, the keys are there.
Yep.
And then that's where what I kind of alluded to earlier, Thor says, why are there so many shoes in here? That's what I said about when we talked about Stan, how prominent shoes are, because they kept using shoes, like you mentioned, to toss into that portal. And apparently they did that quite a few times and left Thor quite confused by it. What is unusual about the rainstorm that occurs immediately after Jane has returned to Earth after encountering the Aether?
It's avoiding her, right? It's
yes,
raining
the
everywhere,
rain doesn't fall
is.
On Jane. I don't even remember that now. Just watched it.
Yeah, and then she after Thor takes her away, she had been standing with Darcy, who's also dry because she was standing next to Jane. And then Jane goes away, and now Darcy's getting drenched.
That sounds a little familiar now.
Yeah.
What is the name of the event that occurs every 5,000 years when the nine realms align perfectly?
The convergence.
Good, you got that one right away. Yes. I'm not sure if that's a thing in the comics or if it was just invented for the sake of this movie. Okay, I think
I was hoping Odin's sleep would come back. It's too bad, but now we got a convergence, so we'll take what we can get.
I think this one might be properly phrased. Let's see. Who does Frigga Who does Frigga sacrifice her life to protect? It's still
Worded. That's a little weird, but it's for Jane.
That's correct. Jane Foster. So how'd you feel when Frigga met her demise?
I mean, it was sad. I was happy because I thought she had absolutely nothing at all to do in the first movie. So when she's there and says, I'll protect her, and then she gets to like do some badass fighting, we got her to see her do something kind of cool, and then she dies. Sad.
Yeah.
kind of a bummer. I mean, good for Rene Russo to get to do a cool action pow-pow scene and do something significant and noble, but it's like, it's a character that we don't really get to know. We know she's there and she's important to them because they say so, it's their mother, but I don't know, too little.
I think they mention her being like a witch, having powers that kind of... Did she teach them to Loki? Is that why he knows the trick?
It's something... There's a part where they say something like, Loki got her... You got mother's... I can't remember what it is, but yeah, something that he got from her. Not inherited, maybe she taught because they're not biologically not really related. But yeah, she gave him his sort of, maybe she taught
his
him
whole shtick.
The tricks, his whole shtick. Yeah, I guess it's sort of poignantly shown when he's in prison after she dies and he's projecting an image of nonchalance and polished put togetherness. And then he drops that mask when Thor's there and you see he's just like wrecked the place. He's obviously upset about her death. He looks terrible. So we get that. We get the effect on others, but I wish we'd had a little bit more time with her.
Right. We do get more of what she means to Loki. And we really get to explore that a little more, that you see he has affection for his adoptive mother and the bond that they've sort of had. So that's a little more depth, even if it's maybe not fully fleshing out her character in a way you would have preferred, but it's nice. And it also makes it a little more tragic because he's just been locked up in this cell in the prison. And so he sees this whole rebellion and he's just still keeping to his cell and not trying to get away.
Yeah, he's painting a book.
Yeah, just la-di-da.
Yeah.
But he's also not trying to actively participate in it. But as the big Algrim curse walks by, he says, you might want to take the stairs to the left. So had he not done that, maybe she wouldn't have been killed.
Yeah, he helped a little.
And he probably realized that, and probably that helped wreck him emotionally in this.
Yeah.
See him once he drops the charade. With that, that's all the trivia cards. And we could just discuss things on a more general level. I did note, I'm not sure if I'm 100% right on this, but I feel, is this the first time we see the big animated comic panel Marvel Studios opening logo? Where it's got the big orchestration that you see all the panels flipping by?
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe it at least was a new version of it. I feel like we haven't seen that thus far.
You might be right. I don't know if I noticed.
I'd have to look that up. So in this movie, like we've said, we have Malekith as the villain. And he is played by Christopher Eccleston. Does that name ring a bell to you?
Is that one of the... It sounds vaguely familiar. Is that one of the Doctors Who?
Yes.
I never watched Doctor Who, but I'm vaguely aware of them being in the worst.
I looked him up to check, and it said he's the ninth Doctor.
Okay.
So I wanted to make sure I got that right. Overall, how'd you feel of his performance?
It was okay. It was pretty... I mean, comic book villainy, which is exactly what he is.
But I'll say this about this movie. I enjoyed it fine this time around. It's not a bad movie, but I hold it fairly low in the whole greater pantheon because to me, until I rewatched it, it was very forgettable, I felt. Mm. And he, I think, is the most forgettable villain of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Didn't leave a mark. So it's fresh in my mind having watched it and discussing it with you, but I forget that Malekith was ever a thing. So
I can't even remember what he looked like, and I just watched the movie 2 days ago.
Well, speaking of what he looks like, in his way, interesting, he's called a dark elf when he's very white in the face and white in the hair.
Right, right.
But at one point, Thor is enraged. I think it's right after Frigga is killed. Right. And when he arrives a little too late, he sends lightning out of Mjolnir, zapping him in the face. And it sort of scars half his...
Oh, yep, yep.
In the comics, he has this half and half face. One side is just like blue.
Oh, interesting.
So this is their way of matching...
Their little nod to the comic... Both.
Yeah. So we talked about how it started in the flashback. We get to see that big rainbow beam again when people pop out after. I don't think we've seen it for a while because they had to repair the Bifrost.
Right.
And we see Odin's father, Bor, and he's got a big Asgardian army. And then, like I mentioned, we see Odin chains and he's facing Odin for punishment. And Odin mentions, as if they really need to hammer this in there to the audience.
We're not gods!
Hey, you were...
I wrote that down. I was like, they are really hammering that point.
Just a reminder, we are technologically advanced aliens who have a long lifespan.
Right. I understand why. There's no stakes. if they're gods. If they're gods, we can't be that worried about them dying. They're just magic and anything can happen. There's no rules. They're gods.
But I feel like
so I understand why.
I feel like mythological gods don't necessarily have to be immortal.
Sure, but I feel like the connotations today, if we hear someone's a god, I feel like automatically I'm going to dismiss them a little bit as somebody I need to worry about. Oh, he's a god. He's fine. In the context of Norse mythology, I think it is more like they are a little bit more human-y. Even as gods.
Sure.
But today you see a god, you're just like, oh, it's a god. What do I care? You'll be fine. You're a god. Go god yourself as whatever the situation is.
Yeah, here. I guess sometimes going over to the DC side of things for a moment, people, when they complain about Superman, they feel, well, what can you do with that? He's not relatable, right, etc. But he is about as close as a god power-wise as you could be within that universe.
Yeah.
But still, kryptonite exists. He can be killed.
Yeah.
In
they
the
set
right
up, they set up things where they've been able to bring him lower to make a more interesting narrative.
On a tangent, he's got a movie coming out. I'm looking forward to that. It's directed by James Gunn, who kind of got his feet wet in the superhero world with Marvel.
Right.
Before now, he's one of the bosses at DC. But
switch
I'm really
looking sides. Forward to that. Oh, scandalous! I don't think it's actually scandalous, but that's funny.
No. There was some scandal because he originally was fired from doing Guardians 3 because of some old tweets that resurfaced and whatever.
I vaguely remember something about that.
And I think that might have been what helped lead him to DC. But then he got brought back on.
We don't care.
He got brought back.
Either way.
He got brought back on and did direct it in the end. But now he's basically running the show over there. They're starting fresh. They're rebooting
sure.
in a new version of their world from what they had in the past bunch of years. And I'm excited for it. I'm not the biggest DC fan, as we could see from this podcast and how I talk about this stuff passionately. I'm all about Marvel. But when it comes to Superman, it's Superman.
Good to be well-rounded.
Sure. That's what you want to call it. I wanted to mention, in that big fight we mentioned at the beginning when they're on Vanaheim, Thor arrives and approaches this big rocky guy.
Oh, yeah, the big rocky guy.
He's talking about getting him to surrender or whatever, and they're fighting. And then he, like, spins his hammer a bunch and then does an uppercut and just knocks him in the jaw and somehow makes him all crumble as if he legitimately was just a pile of rocks. Not sure how that works, but I guess he used enough strength on it. But I bring it up because in Thor's very first comic appearance, Journey into Mystery 83, he fights that race. They were originally called the Stone Men from Saturn. More recently, another one came up in a crossover. It's a bunch of years back now, but it's relatively more modern, and they're called Cronins. So that's their official race designation, but they were originally called the Stone Men from Saturn back in the very first issue that featured Thor in Marvel. So it's a fun little
that's a good Easter egg.
Then after they win, they have their little victory feast. Everyone's excited and happy and sharing stories from the battlefield. And I noticed Volstagg at a point, he tosses his cup back and says, "Another." And so you realize that must be something common there, because that's what Thor does in the cafe in the first one.
Oh, right.
He smashes the coffee mug and he startles everyone, because not quite the tradition.
Asgardian drinking culture. I love it. Yeah, that was the scene where Lady Sif is trying to urge Thor to have a drink. Have another drink. Can I get you a drink? It almost felt a little bit, and it's kind of subtle. Like, she kind of likes it.
Yes.
Right?
There's definitely a hint of sort of a love triangle there, but not much more than that. It seems
other scene when Jane gets to Asgard, where she's tasked with escorting Jane somewhere as part of some plan. But when they first see each other, they've passed by each other and give each other that real suspicious little eye squint that women in movie, you know, romantic rival kind of look to each other. It's very fleeting, but definite. So I'm glad they didn't get too into it. I think that would have been tiresome.
Maybe. It could have been an interesting side plot, because Sif also is not given much to do.
Yeah, she's given short shrift.
Yeah, she takes part in battles and there's a little dialogue here and there, but she's barely a character when you think of it. And I guess they really wanted to lean in on the Jane Thor romance as the main love interest. So she kind of gets pushed to the side. But I believe in the comics, she has been a love interest of Thor's
at times.
I forgot to mention the director of this one is Alan Taylor. I think he cut his teeth in TV like Game of Thrones.
Yes, he was familiar to me as a Game of Thrones watcher, as one of the frequent directors. Game of Thrones. And there was kind of, again, a Game of Thrones, a Tolkienian kind of vibe to Thor world, to Asgard. There's a quasi-medieval
And I think Sopranos also, things like that. So that
The Sopranos.
What he did.
So speaking of, I guess, the romance element of it. It sort of starts out that, as we just said, Thor's a little mopey. He's frequently going to visit Heimdall to check on Jane. You get the sense, right?
And
Your lady is doing fine.
She's a little
You know?
mopey herself.
Right, and then she's a little mopey, and she's sort of like half-heartedly going through a date, and then the equipment starts beeping, and suddenly she comes
Yeah,
to
Darcy
life.
comes on strong with the third wheel vibes, just
Right.
almost seemingly oblivious of the fact that they're on a date. She's just like, hey,
Right. She don't care.
this is my thing. Pay attention to me now.
Exactly. Which is great. It was perfect Darcy behavior. But I was thinking, and they do address it later, but at this point in the movie, I'm going, why are they so mopey? He was just in New York. Couldn't he have looked her up? What's going on? And
Well, that's her point, basically. She's like,
they
where
do
were
address
you?
that. In fact,
You're in New
she
York.
smacks him when they first see each other and says, you know.
Well, she slaps him first to see if he's real, then
That's
slaps
true. And
him
then she
for
slaps
not
him again for not
being
looking her up.
in
So that
touch.
was great. And it's also a very funny mirror to that scene later when she slaps Loki
Yes,
and says, that's for New York. That was a very funny line. But yeah, I'm glad they addressed it because at first I was just like, oh, this is going to irritate me. There's no reason they couldn't have hung out. Clearly, the Rainbow Bridge has been repaired. They can come see each other. But yeah, we do see. He was busy saving the world and
as
restoring
one
peace to
does.
the realms. So he couldn't look her up just then.
Sure.
And then there's a nice little bookmark to that at the end of the movie, the very end of the movie, in
Oh
our
yeah, the
post-credit
post
sequence,
credits. So
where
now
we
he.
get a romantic happy ending kind of deal
So it's seemingly
there.
much quicker than the last time he reunited. I think it's
Yeah.
within the same day, maybe, because they're all hanging out in the kitchen where we saw them earlier, Darcy,
Yeah.
Eric, and Jane, and he shows up. You hear the lightning. I mean, you hear the thunder. You don't hear lightning, Zach.
Come on, Zach. No.
And then they reunite and they embrace and they share another
Yeah.
passionate kiss. But then also we get the funny tag of the beast that was transported from
Yes.
Jotunheim. We
Like a
get
big dog.
another look at one of those beasts. Maybe it's the same one from the first movie. Maybe they killed that one. I can't remember. But then one of those comes through and it's just chasing birds, jumping around
Yep.
like a big
Just
dog. Like,
cavorting. I guess it was more like a cat, but it was definitely cavorting like a creature.
yeah, so like I've said before, sometimes the mid-credits sets up things to come, and then often the post-credits is a little
Funny
jokey thing.
button. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. At one point, speaking of birds, I thought when Jane and Darcy are first investigating the sort of anomaly, I thought I saw the two ravens fly by, but looking it up, I think they're maybe present when Loki's first being brought in. I didn't see you
Yes,
mention
they
that.
were definitely present
You
when we
saw them?
first see him come in chains into Odin's chamber. They're hanging out with their boy Odin.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I didn't catch them there.
Because I remember ravens being an Odin thing, right? It's one
Yes.
eye, it's the ravens, it's, how do you say the tree? Yggdrasil? Yggdrasil? Tree life, life tree, that thing. That's all the Odin stuff I remember.
Yeah, they're hugging and munning. And
There you go. I knew they had names, but again, not great with names. Raven nicknames.
so when we
So,
start, go
when's
ahead.
the crisis bad enough for S.H.I.E.L.D. and the rest of the Avengers to get involved?
Well, again, this is something that came up in these early post-Avengers Phase 2 things, because now they've established this team and S.H.I.E.L.D. working with them, and we have some big stuff happening, but it's being handled by one hero at a time. And it's
I
never
know
really
it's really
addressed
because
much.
a hero needs his own movie. I mean, I get it in terms of the
That.
structure of cinema and the Marvel Universe, but in terms of the story, this ether thing was pretty bad. I
The
feel like
only.
S.H.I.E.L.D. would have come by and said, "Hey, you need some help?"
Yeah, the only thing I could think of as far as other heroes not showing up, and maybe this is addressed in official materials like the timeline. They've kept an official timeline. I don't know how much it holds up, but it could be that these sequels are kind of happening at the same time.
Okay, I
So
mean
maybe
that's
Iron
fair.
Man, he's
Everybody's
going through his
busy.
PTSD while Thor is gallivanting with Jane in the ether and the Dark Elves.
Yep, everybody's got their own stuff to deal with. Don't have time for you right now, but we'll get together soon.
Yeah, when a bigger threat comes that we
Yeah.
can't handle on our own, then
Yeah. It's sort of
we'll
like Thor's
reunite.
got this one. Thor's got
Yeah,
it. He's
yeah.
handling it.
So Shield's probably aware and keeping abreast of all this stuff that's
Sure.
going on, but do they feel they need to, or do they feel they even can handle something like this? They probably see it's an Asgardian problem. Let
Yeah,
the Asgardians
let's let the
handle it.
Asgardians handle
Yeah.
it. That's fair enough.
Yes, and when they're talking about the convergence earlier on, I noticed, I think it's Heimdall says something about, this is the first time I've seen this Marvel since my watch began. I just made a note of that because I don't know if the word Marvel has appeared in dialogue up to this point.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's pretty good.
Funny little observation. I'm pretty sure I would have caught if they used it another time, and I would have made a note of it like I just did.
It's also nice to hear him referencing his watch beginning because it once again supports the we are not gods. There's a beginning, there's time. there's before time and the ether comes from, but like Odin has a dad. Odin isn't the first god,
right?
Kind of thing. It just helps reinforce that sense of sort of we're not gods, that sort of continuity.
Yes.
Of the universe.
And so soon enough after she discovered the thing in her studies, Jane gets possessed by that ether. And it's kind of creepy how it's shown with this red goo going into her. And that kicks off a whole series of events with the film and Thor coming to aid her and stuff like that.
I call that creepy dark energy. Oh no, Jane's got the creepy dark energy. Oh look now. What's his name? Malekith's got the creepy dark energy.
Yes.
Creepy dark energy is back.
And also I made note of when they reunite, it's almost like a trope. They have their kiss and romantic music, mm-hmm. but then it's cut off by a side character moment. Some other little thing just for a little joke.
It's like the law. You can't just have a straight romantic moment in this kind of movie.
Sure. And then we do have, with her going to Asgard, this is the first time Jane got to experience the Rainbow Bridge. So she studies this stuff on a scientific level. Now she's getting to experience it for herself.
And she said, we've got to do that again. Right? She loved it.
Then when she's there, we get a glimpse of a new side of Odin where he comes off as a disapproving parent where it's like, I don't know. I don't like this love interest.
I don't know about your date. Yeah. It was very, there was definitely that vibe. Like, what are you bringing trouble around? Now we have to deal with this. Yeah.
Oh, now I see, as we discussed earlier, I wrote this quote down, relics that predate the universe.
That's right.
So that's
that stood out.
He's not naming them, but that's the Infinity Stones. Yet, this is Malekith made the ether from darkness, so it seems like he made it from darkness, which separates it from these other relics that predate the universe. But I guess somehow they're saying I think it might contradict information we hear about the stones later. The fact that it makes it sound like he just pulled darkness into this red goop, it again doesn't quite line up with it being one of these key elements of the universe, these stones, when it's not even a stone.
Yeah, they say something like it turns matter into dark matter, which sounded like quasi-scientific. They're trying to this physics view of what this thing does. Still not a stone.
Yeah.
It's still
always bugged me. Always bugged me. And at one point, Loki is very heated. I think it's maybe talking to Frigga, and he goes, he's not my father. And it sounds like another cliche of the angry
not
kid
my dad.
Bothered by the stepdad having a so here it's the adoptive father.
Really lovely scene for the funeral, that ritual that sort of
it's basically the traditional Viking funeral.
Viking
they're off on a boat and
everyone sort of
shoot arrows at her.
Globes of
light. I noted that. I'm like, what are these glowing orbs launching into the air? Because I don't know what that's supposed to be.
And maybe we're not supposed to. Maybe we're just supposed to accept that there's something that Asgardians do when someone dies. They have
because you see something. The boat is on fire from the arrow, and then it kind of goes over the falls, but it kind of stays in place hovering for a little before it drops, and you see little sparkly...
Right, like she's joining the matter of the universe kind of thing.
Yeah, and then I guess somehow those globes are connected to that part of things.
It was very pretty. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a lovely little scene. Also, I wasn't getting back to your buddy, the cursed Algrim. When we see him, he's a dark elf. He's like the dark elves. He's kind of the right-hand man of Malekith when he's in his more human dark elf form. And I was really not sure how the transformation works because he puts a mask on that like becomes his face.
Right.
Then also he sort of like grabs something from his side. And
then he like pulls something out of him or something. Like it was...
He pulls something out and then does he put it back in? Somehow he's activating some transformation.
And it's basically like, you're going to die, but before you die, you're going to be indestructible or something. It was like a real gloomy kind of a, poor Algrim, but he's a bad dude.
I'm not that familiar with the character in the comics. And I don't know if this is actually a thing with him or if he's always the big monster. So it could be something they came up with in the movie. I'm not honestly sure about that. I did notice a few things Penny brought up while watching this movie, which was good because I like to see her engage with the material because sometimes she wants to do something else and I have to pull teeth a little to get her to watch the movies to let her be part of this and that father-daughter bonding experience.
Aww.
But as we were watching, she did ask, when Heimdall is gone, can others breach the gate? I don't know if she phrased it exactly like that, but that's how I jotted it down. I thought that was a very good point because he leaves his...
post. Yeah.
That's the word I was looking for. He leaves his post. So is that a key where others can get by? But how would others access the Bifrost from the other end? I don't know. But it seems like he has to be there for a reason to prevent outsiders. But I don't know how they would activate it remotely.
Are there other people that can take that watch? Isn't there a scene at some point where he and Thor are sort of chilling together, not really in that location, and they're
Yes,
just
we
letting their
first
hair
see him
down?
without the helmet on, I think.
Yeah. So it's like he doesn't have to be there
All the time.
24/7.
Because I think he is all seeing, and I don't think that's tied to
Well, that's true. He
him
can
being there.
see still. It's just he doesn't have to be standing there. It's probably just best. Oh, look at me making up excuses for him. I don't know what the answer is. It's a very good question, though,
And
anyway.
another thing I thought was a good observation. When Asgard is attacked by the Dark Elves and they have those ships and they're flying and they're blasting lasers, I just overheard her say, "So it's basically just Star Wars now." And that's a fair point. Because
Astute.
it's
Very
very Star
astute.
Warsy there. They have these ships, they're blasting lasers. It looks like it could have been taken from a scene from one of the movies. But on the note of that, even though those are things I just kind of jotted down in passing, she wanted to bring up another point. So we might as well head over to Penny's Corner. Penny, what do you got for us?
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. And today, we are talking about Thor 2, also known as Thor the Dark World. And the fun fact is, Thor's hammer was flying through, and one of the characters, Darcy, sees it flying by and pronounces it Mew Mew, which is the way she mispronounces it in the first movie. But anyways, that's all for Penny's Corner. I'll see you next time. Bye!
Yeah, that was another funny moment from Darcy where we see that hammer fly by and, oh, meow meow. You know,
yes.
So it's a little carryover from the first movie. So that is a funny little thing. Thank you for that, Penny. So getting back to the battles, though, like I was saying, I noticed Frigga seems to be a better fighter than the actual soldiers.
Yeah.
When she's forced to start getting into it, she's holding her own for a good while. Whereas you see the soldiers going against the Dark Elves and they're getting blasted left and right.
Yeah.
They're like taken out easily. Some of them fight a little longer, but I feel they're very easy. I'm like, is it that Dark Elves are just so strong and powerful and their weapons are so powerful? Or are the Asgardians basic everyday soldiers not great at their jobs? Or maybe it's a combination of the two. I'm not sure.
Yeah, is it like Stormtrooper rules where they're just not the sort of faceless sort of fighters are not particularly good at
right, but that usually applies to bad guys.
The other guy, yeah, that's true.
Our heroes need to not
we don't
be
want the heroes.
Blasters.
Well, so. I mean, in every movie, when one person comes in to sort of clean up and knock out a bunch of people at once, the bad guys are always coming at them one at a time. They're like waiting until the first guy's done being beat up before they go for the fighting person. I know why, but it's very silly. Wouldn't you all just sort of jump on the fighter guy at once and overpower them?
Yeah, that's definitely an observation I made with some of those things. It's like, why are you waiting? Just
why are you waiting? What are you waiting for? Your buddy's getting creamed here. Let's go.
Strength in numbers, guys.
Mm-hmm.
So then at one point they talk about taking Jane to the Dark World, and I was like, hey, that's the name of the movie.
Oh, the movie.
titular line.
Take a drink.
So that was kind of funny. No, I was saying, is the Dark World its own thing, or is that just another name for Svartalfheim?
Oh, yeah.
If that's the world of the Dark Elves, you think, therefore,
it
that's
must
the Dark World.
Be.
But they're
it
calling it
be.
The Dark World. It seems almost like they just had to get the titular line in there.
Yeah.
So that we know that why it's called that.
I feel like the name of the subtitle of the movie came first, and then they sort of hammered it into
maybe
the script.
And we get a mention of the Tesseract before the mid-credits scene. The Tesseract is locked away in the vaults, so we are made aware of its whereabouts.
Right.
Even before that little scene. So, okay, so that's what became. We did see Thor take it and use it to transport him and Loki back to Asgard when the Rainbow Bridge was out of commission. But now we know it's there and Asgard locked away. And as we mentioned, Loki, he was all disheveled when he revealed his true self. But then as soon as he's freed from the prison by Thor to help with the little trickery of that portal, he's all bright and jovial and joking around. It was like a real 180.
Real, yeah.
I guess freedom will do that to a trickster god. But that's when he starts doing those little shape-shifting magical things where he pretends to be Sif and a soldier and good old Captain America. So he sure got over his mom's death.
Yep.
That
he
element.
Bounced back quick. Hey, speaking of which, I think that's a good segue into we haven't mentioned when I said I'm pretty sure Loki isn't dead. Of course I'm pretty sure because the very last scene in the movie before the credits, right?
Yes.
Is
once again, he's tricked his way out
back.
Of death where we see Odin giving Thor a talking to. And it seems like a father-son bonding moment where at the same time, Thor is basically refusing to be king because
right.
He feels like I can do more good out there. And Odin's talking to him and he says he can't give Thor his blessing or wish him good fortune. And as I watched it, I was like, well, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because things went a little differently in your whole treason thing, you can wish your son good luck and good fortune and give your blessing because you realize that's what he's all about. But then it's revealed it's Loki. But then at the same time, I was like, man, that's impressive of Loki because he really captured Odin and his whole
thing. Yeah, he did a good job. So, but also, where's really Odin? Where the heck's Odin then?
That's the lingering question. I guess we'll have to keep watching.
Oh,
I guess he studied Odin enough to really capture that performance. But going back a little bit, when he and Thor first take one of the ships from the Dark Elves, they're trying to get it working, and he's kind of mocking Thor as he fiddles around. And then we get a good old hitting a piece of technology to get it to work. Another one of these tropes, cliches, and it does the trick. But between them, I know you said Hemsworth still doesn't really much do it for you, but I feel we got a little bit more out of him, like with the drama between him and Loki. I felt there was more emotion. There was intensity.
Yeah, there was some good brother stuff in it.
I think you see him growing into the role a little bit more, at least at points in this movie.
He's not terrible. I just don't find him terribly exciting. And you know what? Maybe he shouldn't be king. Not everybody's cut out for management. You know, some people should be on the ground.
Sure. And I don't overall feel, for the most part, throughout the whole MCU, I don't know that anyone or any project I would consider terrible. I think the range is like, meh, to wow, that was amazing.
Yeah.
So like, at worst,
been watchable,
you're like, meh.
So far. Everything's been watchable. So there's certainly a minimum level of quality in these as entertainment pieces that are bringing the crowds to the theaters.
Sure. Watchable has to count for something.
Yeah.
And back to the brothers, there's multiple times where Thor's pals warn him, if you betray him, I'll kill you. Yeah. And it's a little funny recurring bit for a bit. And then it seemingly happens because they're out there looking for Malekith and Loki apparently slices Thor's hand off.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's reaching to summon Mjolnir and he slices it clean through. But when he does, you see like the meat and the bone in there, but there's no blood.
Right.
So that's quite unusual. Weird. Sometimes when you see a lightsaber do it in Star Wars, you think, okay, cauterize the wound.
It's cauterizing, right.
But this is just a blade. But maybe that was intentional because it kind of shows, oh, it's an illusion.
Right.
So maybe that was that was a hint that you can realize something's off here.
Something a little off about it. Yeah.
Oh, and speaking
I remember going, oh, how rude. How could you do that? What? And then, oh, it's all according to plan. I get it. Yeah, I got fooled. I thought he was betraying him.
So on that note of the hand and Star Wars, remember I told you this is a recurring thing in Phase 2. As Kevin Feige is a Star Wars fan, and with Empire Strikes Back, Luke losing his hand. But this has more than one, because later on in the final battle, when they're fighting Malekith, they basically use portals as dismemberment. So he's using portals, and both Malekith's arms are cut out by a portal opening, the arm going through it, and the portal closing. So,
that's pretty wild. So imaginative way of vanquishing the foe.
Yeah, in addition to Thor's hand being sliced, in quotes, so to speak, from Loki. And then at one point, where they're confronted with Malekith before the whole hand-cutting portal thing, he ends up being able to pull the ether out of her, and she's raised in the air, arms spread out, in what you could call a T pose, if you're speaking of video game characters where that's the basic position, but also it's very Christ-like, Christ on a cross. I feel that's another cliche.
Yep.
When you're being possessed, you just stretch out. I think it's probably even in Stranger Things, the last season, I feel like when people were hovering in the air, they were probably with the arms spread out that. It's just one of those things you see. It seems like there's several of these little cliches in this movie, but then he sucks it out and then he gets it and he absorbs it into himself. And then, like we said, he's able to weaponize it. And so the big final battle happens in Greenwich and things are porting here and there because there's the little portals you see, the glimpses into the other realms and the scientific equipment once Selvig's got his stuff together and working with Darcy and Jane and Ian, and they're controlling the portals with their little tech and everything's chaos. And there's a big one of those ships tearing through England and all sorts of craziness going on. And at some point, I forget how Thor got there, but he's separated and he ends up needing to go on a train and he asks for directions.
That was vague to me. I feel like I missed something. I was like, is he on a train? And somebody, a woman, lurches into him on the
She's very nonchalantly giving him directions. She sees Thor in front of her and she just kind of says, you get on here and you go some matter of stops, and not at all taken back. But then the train stars, and she lurches into him, and the hand goes on the chest, and
right,
almost like Peggy when she first sees the new Captain America, the new Steve Rogers. So there's a little hint that this woman is like, yeah, let me get a piece of that Thor gob.
A little interested. But
yeah, at the start, she's just very matter of fact in her directions. And I guess I'm getting to the end of it now, because all that's left, we already covered the mid and post credit scenes.
Yep.
And my last thing is that Stellan Skarsgård, or Stellar Skateboard, and
your
Tony Stark style nicknames, yep, he gets pretty high billing in this. And yeah, I don't think his role, his screen time are really deserving of it.
Is he one of the bigger names in the cast?
I guess maybe. I mean, but also then Odin gets like an and Anthony Hopkins.
Sure. So well, it's Sir Anthony Hopkins. Bigger than a Stellar Skateboard.
So yeah, so even though he's a bigger name, he comes later because of those rules,
yeah,
with the and with and the special treatment. But still, it felt pretty high given what his role in this was. So that is the last of what I had to say on this movie, now that we've gotten those last scenes out of the way already. Any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, it was watchable. I enjoyed it about as much as I enjoyed the first Thor, which was not as much as the others, but it wasn't the worst movie ever. It wasn't a terrible movie watching experience. That's all I can ask for at the low bar end of these. I'm hoping
sure,
for a wonderful
experience,
but I'll take a watchable experience. So.
Yeah, definitely. It's not the worst it could be. And like I said, this one didn't really stick with me of the whole pantheon, and I found the villain forgettable. But just keep that in mind to know that this is probably on the lower end of the Marvel quality spectrum. So it can only mostly go up from
here.
So that's what you've got to look forward to. There are going to be hills and valleys, but I think the heights are pretty high and the lows never get especially low. So
that's good to know.
Yeah, there you have
it. I'm looking forward to the next one. What are we? I can't believe I'm saying this now. Every week I'm looking for, it's like a fun thing I do now,
exactly,
is watch Marvel movies. Like, my whole life has changed that.
Like I said, even if we didn't release a single episode, we're having fun.
We're having some fun.
And in the end, isn't that
that's what it's all about?
What it's really about. It's our thing, and we have our fun thing, even if we never share it to anybody.
That's right. It's still this fun thing. It's a worthwhile use of both of our time, I think.
I think so, for sure. Now, with the next one. The next thing I have on my timeline I did of release order is actually the final of the Marvel one-shots. So I thought maybe next, it's still going to be a quick episode because there are only four of them and they're only minutes long.
Okay. Each,
because we've skipped the others because you couldn't do a full episode on an individual like 3 minute segment. So now I figured we could do a special, still much likely very short episode compiling the four of them. Do you think that sounds like an okay idea?
That sounds very doable to me.
Right. So there's The Consultant. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Thor's Hammer.
I like the title of that one.
Agent Carter, not to be confused with the series. So make sure you're looking at the right thing on the Disney.
That's a one-shot and not a whole series. Got it.
And then All Hail the King.
Okay. All right.
So sounds like you've got your assignment.
Yes, Sensei. I will do the homework.
Exactly. And we will pick up from there and then get back to the movies and things. And I think it's going to be mainly movies for a while. And then more shows will appear when they do. But for this episode, this was fun, as always, like we've already said. And I look forward to the next one and all the future ones. So thanks again for doing this with me, Tavy. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you keep tuning in. And thank you for sticking with us this far. Or if you're new, thanks for jumping on the 9th episode. We're on, but we'll take you.
Thanks for randomly listening to us. That's nice.
Any episode you want to listen to, maybe this was your favorite Marvel movie, and that's why you
chose Thor Dark Ages lovers really are gonna flock to this one. I can't wait.
So yeah, thanks everybody, and we will see you next time.
Have Bye. A good one.
Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips, featuring Penny Walliner, edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giarusso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZachTavieMarvel. Thanks again for tuning in. Enough said.